We're talking about nurse practitioners and how to treat the opioid crisis. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The rural physician shortage is well established, and there's another layer to this that doctors don't necessarily establish practices where need for healthcare is the greatest. And so in the midst of this opioid epidemic, advanced practice providers like nurse practitioners could step in at a critical time. But each state approaches regulating their work in a different way. And so we're hearing the case for why they should treat addiction. Do you live in a rural area where primary care physicians are hard to find? Do you rely on a nurse practitioner for your care? What is that like? We're at 800-642-1234. You can join in at any point in the hour. David Hebert is CEO of the American Association of Nurse Practitioners. He recently co-authored a piece with former Wisconsin Governor Tommy Thompson, and it makes the case for giving nurse practitioners more autonomy in their work. David, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
So you argue that nurse practitioners could be one part of this solution to the opioid crisis. Help us connect the dots on that. How do you see nurse practitioners fitting into this?
Sure. Well, the fact is that this has to be an all-hands-on-deck effort. Nurse practitioners are well-trained healthcare providers who have been practicing, for well over 50 years as a profession. And the fact is that they are well-trained to help in the opioid crisis. For example, up until a couple of years ago, nurse practitioners were essentially treating patients, and then when they ultimately had the opioid addiction, there was a problem with their ability to provide medication-assisted therapy. We were fortunate in getting that changed in Congress, allowing nurse practitioners to get these this MAT treatment, or to provide the MAT treatment for those suffering substance abuse orders. So, the fact is that the crisis is so severe, we cannot afford to disenfranchise patients. We have to make sure that nurse practitioners are there on the front lines, and they are.
Is there, we've known about the shortage of primary care physicians. Can nurse practitioners fill in the gaps there, especially in the rural areas?
Well, they absolutely can. We have seen, last year, for example, the federal government designated over 7,000 healthcare professional shortage areas. 66% of them are in rural states. In Wisconsin alone, there are 133 federal designated primary care health professional shortage areas, and that affects over 1 million people. That means that less than 60% of healthcare access needs are being met across the state. So clearly there needs to be better pathways for nurse practitioners so that people can have more access to them.
We're talking with Dave Hebert. He is CEO of the American Association of Nurse Practitioners, and we're looking at the pathways. He recently co-authored a piece with former Wisconsin Governor Tommy Thompson that looks at empowering nurse practitioners and how that could make an impact on the opioid crisis. Are you working as a nurse practitioner? What is holding you back when it comes to treating your patients? Is it the way the state regulates the kind of care you can give? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Dave, when we compare nurse practitioners to physicians, what are the differences in what they're able to do?
Well, we hear a lot about the whole issue about nurse practitioner training versus physician training. When it comes to primary care, nurse practitioners do the same thing that family physicians do. The thing is that NPs and physicians have different education models. They're different professions. But as healthcare providers, they diagnose, treat, prescribe, and manage patient care. Both professions share the same underlying core knowledge and skill sets. Essentially, a nurse practitioner is a registered nurse. He or she will apply to a nurse practitioner program. He or she will receive a master's degree, and then many go on to get a doctorate as well.
And what happens when you get a doctorate? Is there a different level of scope of care you're able to do?
No, not necessarily. It depends on the doctoral program. Different doctoral programs have different curriculum. Some may have more clinical training. Some may have different training in other areas. But essentially, when a nurse practitioner comes out of a school, they get licensed, they get certified, and they are ready to practice.
What's been the issue, Dave, around prescribing, and why is it that all different states have different ways they regulate this profession?
Well, it has been a little frustrating. Nurse practitioners can prescribe in all 50 states. There has been some differentiation in terms of controlled substances. But, you know, when it comes down to it, there has been objections over the years by some in organized medicine who favor more restricted practice by nurse practitioners, some of whom just, you know, in our belief, just don't want the competition.
How do nurse practitioners then differ from physician assistants, from PAs?
Well, we are different. Nurse practitioners are trained in a different model. They're trained in a nursing model. They are trained to essentially practice on their own, assuming, you know, state laws allow that. Physician assistants, and I don't mean to speak for them, but essentially their training is a little bit different, and they essentially hang their license with the physician. So there tends to be a greater requirement for a closer working relationship with physicians than nurse practitioners require.
You said earlier about medication-assisted treatment being one way physicians are addressing the opioid crisis. It combines with medication with therapy. So are nurse practitioners able to provide that care?
They do. In fact, if you look back to 2018, the president signed into law the Bipartisan Substance Use Disorder Prevention Act, and this grants a permanent waiver for nurse practitioners to provide, what we call medication-assisted treatment for those who are suffering from substance use disorders. There are therapies that they prescribe to help people reduce or quit the use of heroin or other opiates, and such as pain relievers like morphine. So we have been involved as leaders in the opioid epidemic for a number of years.
Jim called in to share that he had a bad experience with a nurse practitioner who treated his daughter, saying she was overprescribed antibiotics and think there needs to be a lot of oversight on nurse practitioners, doesn't think it's a good idea to give more autonomy. Do you find that there is some differing thought on this?
Well, there, you know, people can differ on this. Some people simply prefer the medical profession model. And, you know, our view basically is it ought to be a consumer choice. Consumers ought to have the ability to choose if they want to be treated by a nurse practitioner or a physician. It should not be a limitation by state law or limitations imposed by one profession over another. And certainly if one person, you know, feels that they did not get the appropriate treatment, then they should take that up with the state regulatory body.
Talking with Dave Hebert, he's the head of the American Association of Nurse Practitioners. Did you switch from a primary care physician to a nurse practitioner? Why did you make the switch? Let's talk about it. Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're looking at the role of nurse practitioners in the midst of the opioid crisis. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being with us. In nearly two dozen states, nurse practitioners have autonomy to practice free from the supervision of physicians. We're hearing the case for why nurse practitioners are suited to help address addiction and overdoses. Primary care physicians, join in this. Do you think nurse practitioners are just as qualified as a physician to treat opioid addiction. Why or why not? Join in at 800-642-1234. Dave Hebert is CEO of the American Association of Nurse Practitioners, and he stays with us for the conversation. Let's bring in John joining us from Boaz. Hi, John.
Hi. I would like to suggest that if a nurse practitioner, being a frontline technician, they can save one life by administering the anti-venom as fast as possible, because just like a snake bite, it has to be administered right away. Okay, now I would like to say that if a person is out there as nurse practitioner, they should be congratulated by the hospital administration for saving one life.
John, thanks so much for the call. And I think he's referring there, Dave, to opioid reversal drugs. Is that right?
He may well have been. And I thank the caller for his comment. At the core of the comment is if a nurse practitioner can save one life, and they save, thousands of lives over the course of a year, it's worth the investment in nurse practitioners. And the fact is we don't have enough of them. We graduate, 12,000 to 15,000, maybe more per year. But we're still seeing that they continue to fulfill the need, particularly given the shortage forecasted by for primary care physicians.
Well, let's bring in Liz now, joining us from Viroqua. Hi, Liz.
Hi there. Well, I'm calling to praise nurse practitioners. My one here at Viroqua caught a serious medication prescription error in my treatment, and because my potassium level went sky high. And she suspected that one of my medications was the culprit, and we did the test, and she took me off it, and sure enough, that's what it was.
And Liz, do you still go back to her?
Absolutely. She caught the mistake. This mistake was made by a physician in a very large city.
And do you feel like you have a good relationship with the nurse practitioner, that she can spend time with you and listen?
Oh, yeah. She spends more time with me than any doctor ever did.
Well, Liz, thanks so much for the call. Dave Hebert, it sounds like, too, that these are really solid relationships, ones that are developed just like perhaps traditional physician relationships with their patient.
Well, they are great relationships, and I thank the caller for the comment. Nurse practitioners have the reputation of looking at the whole patient. They often spend a lot more time with the patient, not only going over the prescriptions, but learning about the lives of people, and the whole issue about whether they have comorbidities, whether they have issues related to diabetes, what have you. And, we see great satisfaction rates associated with nurse practitioners. The other thing I will add, too, here, incidentally, is that in a lot of states, you're seeing the rise of convenient care and urgent care. And so, for places like CVS and Walgreens and some states, Walmart, people can come in and often see a nurse practitioner, within 15, 20 minutes. And that's really important for busy people who want high-quality health care, and they want it now. So if they're taking their son in for a sore throat, what have you, and they've got to go pick up their daughter at soccer practice, shortly thereafter, it is a great way to get high-quality health care in a convenient way.
And there was some study out of California saying that really cuts down on emergency room volume, and which leads to quite a bit of savings, millions of dollars in savings.
Well, that's an excellent point, and one which should be underscored. We spend so much in our country in uncompensated care, with people getting access to primary care from an emergency room, which is the most expensive way to get health care. And nurse practitioners are a great way to help resolve that problem.
A study that was in the American Enterprise Institute projected that the number of nurse practitioners in the workforce would grow by almost 7% each year from 2016 to 2030. What do you see about that growth and that uptick?
Well, that was a very good study that was put out, I believe, last year. I think what it suggests is that, you know, there's a couple of dynamics working here. Number one, it's an extremely popular profession. Increasingly, you're seeing a lot more people go into it. And I think the other piece is that there is this unmet need that people are recognizing. So increasingly, you see a lot of folks who decide to enter the profession and find it to be extremely rewarding from a personal satisfaction standpoint.
We're looking at the profession of nurse practitioners, how they're regulated, with Dave Hebert. He's CEO of the American Association of Nurse Practitioners. Do you see a nurse practitioner? What stands out to you about your care? Are you in school to become one? What led you to this path? We're at 800-642-1234 for you to join in. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dave, what does pay look like today? How have we seen the average pay go up in this profession?
Well, we have seen it continue to rise. Essentially, I mean, again, it depends on the state. It depends on whether it's an urban area or a rural area. We have seen, you know, pay in the high five figures to, you know, the low six figures, the low 100s or so. And it all depends upon the setting. It all depends on whether they're working in a hospital, are they working in a clinic, are they working in their own practice, are they working in a physician practice. There are a lot of variables.
Let's bring in Mark now, joining us from Western Wisconsin. Hi, Mark.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking the call. I wanted to make a comment on just access to health care and the high cost. So many of the health plans have extremely high deductibles these days. And a group of companies, there were four of us that gathered together and created a near-site clinic. And the nurse practitioner is the primary deliverer of healthcare there. And we found the response has been, you know, incredibly positive. But what's even, I think, more important is that people make decisions not to see a medical person because of the high deductibles. And oftentimes when you go into a clinic, you know, if it's not routine care, you know, it's out-of-pocket costs can run, you know, into the hundreds, if not $1,000 for a visit. So this is something that we see using nurse practitioners in a near-site or on-site clinic. We see as a real opportunity to provide access to people and keep a lid on costs.
And when you say near-site or on-site, what do you mean by that?
Well, so in our case, we've got two plastics companies. My company is a steel fabrication company, and then a school district that have partnered together. We've developed this clinic that is in the community that all the employees, team members from all of our organizations can access, and their families can access these clinics as an alternative to going to a traditional healthcare system.
Mark, thanks so much for bringing that comment to the table here. Dave, what do you hear about how Mark has formed this type of clinic collaboration?
Well, I think it's terrific, and I thank Mark for his comment. We are seeing a lot more innovation in healthcare these days, and it's you know, really born of a requirement and a necessity. Where you see employers grouping together to provide healthcare for their employees, perhaps on site at a central location, as he suggested. You know, again, this comes down to the fact of cost and quality. As he also raised correctly, there are a lot of issues with very high deductibles for health insurance, and that often dissuades people from getting much-needed health care. When that happens, ultimately, if the problems are not caught early, they develop more severe problems. And it obviously works to the detriment of the patient. It also increases healthcare costs. So nurse practitioners are another way that innovative healthcare can increase access and save money.
We're talking about nurse practitioners and how to address the shortage of rural physicians, what this means for the opioid crisis. Dave Hebert is with us. He's CEO of the American Association of Nurse Practitioners. Hospital systems and health officials have been calling urgently for more primary care doctors, but could advanced practice providers like nurse practitioners do more to fill the void? It's a question we're exploring this hour with your thoughts along the way. 800-642-1234. So do you live in a rural area where it's hard to see a primary care doctor? Do you rely on a nurse practitioner for care? What is that relationship like for you? And nurse practitioners, join in. What is your job like? What policy changes could impact your work? We'll pick this up after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the scope of work for nurse practitioners and what impact they could have in addressing the opioid crisis by way of treating people with addictions. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. What we do know is rules vary by state on whether nurse practitioners can practice independently. Meanwhile, the CDC is saying about 72,000 Americans died from a drug overdose last year. We're exploring what it could mean to treat addiction from a public health approach, getting more nurse practitioners involved in patient treatment. So what do you think about seeing expanded roles for nurse practitioners? Do you see a nurse practitioner or a physician assistant for your care right now? What can you tell us about your patient experience? Join in at 800-642-1234. Dave Hebert is our guide this hour. He is CEO of the American Association of Nurse Practitioners. Dave, going back to the study the American Enterprise Institute came out with, it also found that nurse practitioners would be much more likely to practice in rural and underserved areas. What do we know here about this tendency? Why is that happening?
Well, I think, you've got a number of things working on that issue. Number one is that nurse practitioners enter the profession, I think, by and large, because of a dedication to public service. And where they see an unmet need, whether it's in a rural area or an underserved urban area, or oftentimes you see them going off on foreign missions to help in crisis areas and in various countries. It's a dedication to service, and where they see an unmet need, they are anxious to go in, pitch in, and make a difference.
Well, we see the opioid crisis devastating many rural areas. How could having more nurse practitioners in rural areas impact this crisis?
Well, certainly having more NPs in an area is helpful, but also the extent to which we can get rid of these outdated practice and licensure laws that restrict the ability of NPs to engage in one element of their practice. Wisconsin requires a collaborative agreement to be in order to practice, they have to have a collaborative agreement with the physician. And, this is really unnecessary because, generally speaking, the physician is not even in the same facility as the nurse practitioner. I think there's long been a misnomer about supervision and collaboration when it comes to physicians. This is basically oftentimes a piece of paper in a drawer. And nurse practitioners have to pay the physician a monthly fee in order to have this collaborative agreement. That cost goes into the healthcare system, and it's difficult oftentimes for a nurse practitioner to pay that collaboration fee and still maintain her practice.
Let's bring in another call now. Angela joining us from Grand Chute. Hi, Angela. What is your story?
Hi. Good morning. Well, I'm a nurse practitioner student, and I'm almost done with my schooling. But in one of my clinicals, I had some experience with a medication-assisted therapy or MAT therapy for opioid addiction. So I was just saying that the certifying body that allows for medication-assisted therapy, you were opening up certification to nurse practitioners and physician's assistants to provide more providers so that way we can treat more opioid addiction.
Angela, how do you feel that your education has gone in terms of you being prepared with MAT therapy?
Well, the one provider that I was working with that was certified for MAT therapy was a physician. So she had a passion for this, and she brought it to her primary care clinic and opened that up to those patients, and I think that it's great. I mean, I got to see that. And I get to see patients that that I would suspect may need this help and decide on if we should follow through or if there's other modalities for treatment for them, for other things. It depends. Chronic pain patients, sometimes they feel like they're getting too much opioids and like to cut back. And we can offer sometimes medication or a MAT therapy for these patients to help them.
Angela,
amount of opioids.
Yeah, Angela, may I ask you where you might practice once you're finished up with your education?
Well, I'm in a unique position because I live in Gratiot, Wisconsin, which is right on the Illinois border. So I'm about 45 minutes away from Madison. I currently work in Illinois, which listening to the little bit of the talk from a little bit earlier, is now an independent state, which Wisconsin isn't. So I can go in Illinois or Wisconsin or get certified for both.
Angela, thank you so much for describing your situation and your education. Dave Hebert, she lives right on the border of two states that have different ways of approaching their certification, how they treat nurse practitioners.
Well, it's interesting to hear Angela's story. You know, you're exactly right. And I'll tell you, one of the interesting parallels to this is that recently, over the last couple of years, the VA agreed to essentially allow nurse practitioners to practice within their full scope, regardless of the state where the VA facility is located. And so you can see a situation where, oddly enough, a nurse practitioner could be practicing in a VA facility in Alabama and then immediately walk out the door and walk across the street to a healthcare practice and have to be supervised by a physician. So suddenly, you know, walking across the street suddenly, and you know, quote unquote, made that NP less qualified to practice. These are the kind of silly things that we see where the federal government has recognized the value of NPs, whether it's with the VA, the DOD, Indian Health, and a lot of states are still catching up.
When you look at the collaborative agreements in Wisconsin, are they more restrictive when we compare them to other parts of the country?
Well, you know, I think it may well be fairly typical. You know, there's this in the presence requirement when necessary. And, you know, that's, you know, really something that sort of is a distinction without a difference, because it's generally, you know, by and large, not necessary. The one point I would make is that, you know, no one is truly independent. And we refer to this not as independent practice, but full practice authority. When a nurse practitioner or a physician, for that matter, wants additional assistance, they want additional help, they want to refer to a specialist, it doesn't make any difference whether you're a physician or a nurse practitioner. He or she will refer that patient out. They're not going to treat the patient where they feel a specialist is required.
Let's bring in another call now. James joining us from Lake Geneva. Hi, James.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a comment. I'm 60 years old, and I've been retired, and I used to work for the state, so I have a big network. But I know some of my friends that I talk to when we have our get-togethers that haven't seen a doctor for a serious medical problem for up to 3 years. And I think these nurse, and I've seen nurse practitioners work when I worked for the Department of Corrections. So I was there to see what the diagnosis and things like that. And I got to tell you, they might be great for OPAQ, but I think they have too much power now. The training, from what I've seen, is not good, and they get a God complex. It's terrible. But I think the only reason they were to serve rural areas, and I'm all for that, that didn't have access. But they've gone into the cities and the large population areas, and in some clinics, on any given day, they outnumber the doctors.
James, I want to pause right there with so Dave Hebert has time to respond. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think, to each their own. It's up to the patient to decide if they want to be treated by a nurse practitioner or a physician. I will say that the outcomes associated with nurse practitioners are just as good as physicians, and in some states and some studies, they've shown it to be perhaps even better. It really comes to an individual choice. If someone wants to see a physician, then that's their choice. If they want to see a nurse practitioner, that should be their choice too.
Angela earlier mentioned the amount of clinical setting work she had done and shadowing in an office where the opioid practice was really important. I'm wondering, what is the pathway around clinical settings and nurse practitioners? Is there a lot of clinic time?
Well, there is, and of course, it may well be dependent upon the particular program that they're in. But just to give you a bit of a background, NP education starts before an NP is admitted to a graduate program. So comparing graduate medical education to graduate nursing is not appropriate. Admission to an NP program requires that the individual has a bachelor's degree in nursing, a formal undergraduate program of study that includes classroom and clinical education on anatomy and pathology and pharmacology and management of patients, and a license as a registered nurse. Medical students don't have to have this background. So, in fact, many of the same foundational patient care concepts covered in the first years of medical school are the same as those taught to undergraduate RN nursing students. Today, many health science universities co-teach undergraduate RN students and med student courses and have students learning together in the classroom, whether it's simulation labs or clinical settings. So you're often seeing a situation where someone who is an RN before they even get to NP school, who has more clinical training than the resident does coming into practice.
We're talking with Dave Hebert. He's CEO of the American Association of Nurse Practitioners. What is your perspective on getting more nurse practitioners to care for addiction issues? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll get back to this in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. We're spending the hour looking at the role of nurse practitioners. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And there are more than 270,000 nurse practitioners in the U.S. According to the American Association of Nurse Practitioners, most NPs see three or more patients per hour. They've been in practice an average of a decade. They're about 49 years old, and 99% have graduate degrees. We're looking at what nurse practitioners could offer by way of addressing the opioid crisis. Still time for your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Dave Hebert heads up the American Association of Nurse Practitioners, and he stays with us. Let's go back to the phones now with Amy joining us from Milwaukee. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning.
So what,
I am a nurse practitioner. Right now I'm working in a pain clinic, and I've been in a few specialties as an NP. And I love my job, but something I struggle with sometimes is that these providers, the physicians, maybe expect the NPs to come into a new specialty and be ready to go and not able to give the time to help train somebody into the specialty. and where I feel NPs can give as good of care as physicians in many instances. It's often up to the physicians and their groups to help train people in.
Wow, so you find that physicians expect a whole lot of versatility out of you.
Yes.
Dave Hebert, have you heard that before?
Well, we have heard the issue about, you know, whether there is an appropriate onboarding system coming in for nurse practitioners. But this also, frankly, applies to physicians as well who are new to their medical practice. I think it's up to every healthcare practice, whether it's run by an NP or whether it's run by a physician, to make sure that the people that they hire, whether it's an NP or a physician, have a sufficient onboarding system so that they are comfortable to practice. So, you know, the caller raises an interesting question, but I think this is something across the board that it's often a question of the particular practice.
Amy, in your practice, do you go to a lot of conferences? How do you learn a new specialty area?
A fair amount of it is self-driven education. When you can take the time to do it, you have to find your own physician mentor who's willing to sit down with you and go through more complicated cases. Ask other providers, nurse practitioners, PAs, and physicians.
Do you think that this profession has been what you expected? Do you see yourself staying in it for the long haul?
I am going through the process of determining possibly a better practice for my personality and my style of learning right now.
Well, thank you so much for the call. Dave Hebert, what do nurse practitioners grapple with day-to-day in their practices? What is the thing that you hear the most?
Well, I think, you know, we hear a lot of different things. One, you know, with some, it's the lack of respect from their physician colleagues. And I don't want to overstate that because we have a lot of nurse practitioners who have a great working relationship with physicians. But sometimes there are practices where it can be difficult. We also see a frustration with billing and reimbursement. Nurse practitioners are only billed at 85% of the Medicare rate and, you know, feel justifiably so that they should be getting the full 100% that a physician gets. And, you know, there's always the difficulty in any healthcare practice where you've got a lot of patients coming in and they want to devote, you know, all the time necessary to treat that particular patient. And, you know, they are often facing the same pressures that a physician faces in terms of making sure that they have enough time for their patients.
When you look at the states straight across the country, what states for you are the gold standard for the way they allow nurse practitioners to practice?
Well, I think in any of the full practice authority states, those 22 and District of Columbia are great examples. I would hesitate to necessarily pick one. You see some great experiences in D.C., Vermont, and Oregon, Washington State. But any of those states that have full practice authority are doing great things.
And the statistics tell us that malpractice is pretty low. Is that right?
You know, that's one of the great points, and I'm glad you raised that. Because in addition to all the studies that are out there that show that our outcomes are very good, a good barometer of safety and good outcomes are insurance rates. And malpractice rates have been pretty stable over the last number of years. And, you know, if it were not the case, then you would see a ripple effect. And by that I mean you would see states that have once gone for full practice authority would be reconsidering it. That hasn't happened. All the states that have gone forward for full practice authority have kept that.
We had an email here. Clinton in Appleton writes he was setting up a medical appointment with his then physician decades ago, and he was asked if he'd mind seeing a nurse practitioner, a new one, and he agreed. The encounter went well, Clinton said, and the same nurse practitioner has been his primary care provider ever since. So sounds like a very long relationship there. You and Tommy Thompson came together to write this piece in Time magazine, which is where we came by it. And I'm wondering how the two of you came together on this.
Well, I tell you, it was really interesting. Former governor and secretary Tommy Thompson and I met at the Forbes Health Summit last year. And we began talking about a lot of different things about healthcare and nurse practitioners and how supportive he was of nurse practitioners, both as governor and as HHS secretary. And sort of one thing led to another, and it just seemed like a good thing to do.
Do you see any new federal legislation afoot that would perhaps remove restrictions or make states more unified on how they approach nurse practitioners?
Well, I tell you, it's really interesting. There are a lot of anachronisms out there, and right now there is a bill pending in the House and in the Senate that would allow nurse practitioners to prescribe home health services under Medicare. And the odd thing, as I think your listeners will appreciate, is the fact that nurse practitioners can diagnose, treat, and prescribe in all 50 states, but they can't refer people under Medicare to get home health. And this has been an anachronism for a long time and one of the things that has to be changed. So that is one of the things that we are working on at the federal level.
And it sounds like it's these one things at a time in this profession that you're tackling here. I mean, this is one nuance of a lot more complicated issues in the background.
Well, there are. So we are tackling the issues at the federal level. We're tackling them at the state level. And at the same time, we continue to get our efforts out and our message out about the role of nurse practitioners. In fact, we have had a campaign called We Choose NPs. And so if your listeners are interested in going to the website wechoosenps.org, they can get a lot more information about nurse practitioners.
Well, Dave, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been my pleasure.
Dave Hebert is CEO of the American Association of Nurse Practitioners, and he recently co-authored a piece with former Wisconsin Governor Tommy Thompson, and it argues that empowering nurse practitioners could make a real impact in the opioid crisis. This conversation about nurse practitioners is on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're with us here on the Ideas Network.